This is Jane McGonigal, the author of Super Better and a big fan of the Psych Tech Podcast. You're listening to Psych Tech Podcast, where you will get the future of psychology and technology.
This is Psych Tech, the Psychology and Technology Podcast, where on every episode, me, Josue Cardona, and my co-host, Kelly Dunlap, talk about some sort of technology, something or other, and some behavior science, something or other. Does that sound about right?
Yes. We explore, yes, we explore the human side of technology.
I like that one. That's better than what I said.
I've been using it in my pitch class, so.
It sounds good. So this week we're going to talk about, you know, that I don't know if you've ever had this moment where you had an ad pop up on your computer, on your phone, and it felt very timely, maybe very strange that it came up at that exact moment, because maybe you were thinking about that or you were talking about that with somebody, or it just felt like you saw the ad and it was a little surprising, a little shocking. Have you ever had that happen?
Oh, yes. Many, many times.
So can you give me an example?
Baby stuff. So before I was pregnant, I was organizing a friend's baby shower. So I'm, you know, searching for activities and, you know, baby shower registries and all these kind of things, doing my research like a good scientist. And I go to Facebook just to check in, and every single ad on Facebook has to do with pregnancy or maternity or infants, and it made me very creeped out.
Gotcha. But at least you could tie it back to like, oh, well, I was searching that. I was looking for that stuff, right?
Yeah, at least I could put one and one and one, and that's three ones. So I could put one and one and one together and get three. So that was, but still creepy.
Yeah. And I understand it does feel that kind of creepy. But I recently had somebody tell me, like, you know, like I had this thing come up, or I've heard other people say this too. Like I was just having a conversation about this, and then all of a sudden a Facebook ad popped up. And I think my phone might be listening to what I'm saying, or I think my computer is listening to me and is making these ads pop up. And I think that, you know, I've heard a lot of people talk about that. That's kind of a belief that is out there. And so a couple of weeks ago, actually, we talked about the Kinect and how I had put it away because it didn't work all the time, right? But to be honest, it's another reason why I put it away is because it's a huge camera staring at me, right, while I'm sitting in front of my TV. And that makes me feel a little uncomfortable. And they actually sell, like, you can go to Best Buy or GameStop and buy, like, a little door for the Kinect. Have you seen this?
I have, yeah.
Yeah, right. So you can like slide it over so it doesn't see you. And I actually, like, I put tape on all of my webcams, and I am kind of conscious about that. And it's you know, it's something that is like, I don't want people watching me, right? And I don't know if that's, I don't know if people know if it's possible or not, but kind of just that eye looking at you, or the idea that these microphones can possibly hear you, is a fear that a lot of people have. And do you feel that way at all about any of this stuff?
Nope. My Kinect is on all the time. I don't cover my webcams. I don't cover my Kinect. I don't hide my phone or anything like that when I'm having a serious or private conversation. I don't have any concerns about that.
So do you know people who do, other than me?
Well, you're probably my first actual person that I know in real life who had that kind of serious,
really?
Like, aside from my grandma, maybe. But again, I have a very Xbox-centric crowd who tend to like their Kinects and their shiny toys. But I do know a lot of people, when the Kinect came out, even the original on the 360, were really weirded out by it. And then even more so since the Xbox One is quote-unquote always on. It's always connected to the server, and that made a lot of people uncomfortable. So I don't think it's an unusual train of thought. I don't think it's odd that people feel that way. I just don't happen to feel that way.
Okay. Okay. So for the people who do, right, and I empathize, you know, there's a fear there. There's like this anxiety that maybe somebody's going to be, maybe somebody's listening all the time. Maybe somebody's watching what I'm doing. And for the most part, maybe that's like benign, right? But like worst case scenario is my image will appear somewhere. Or something that I said will appear somewhere that I don't want it to. And that's kind of an extreme. Like someone would probably have to really, really want to do something like that. And but on the like on a lesser scale, right? Just the idea that ads are evil and maybe ads are targeting me based on stuff that I'm just doing, just living my life, and now it's watching me, and this kind of thing is coming up. And so recently I started looking up, like, is your computer listening to you? And I found this really interesting thing that happened last year. It was a huge Reddit thread, right, that was going on. And it was about this person who thought that their conversation had led to, like, a conversation they were having with their spouse led to an ad on Facebook. And my first thought was, well, you know, I don't think that Facebook is listening to you. I don't think that that's actually happening. I don't think that your computer is listening to you all the time. And do you think that it's listening to you all the time? Like, do you even, like, you don't, you say you don't worry about it, but if it is, like, do you, are you worried about it, Kelly? Like, are you scared of that? Does it bug you?
Nope. And I've actually got a special something for you. So hold on for just a second. I've got a special psych tech first. All right. Turn this up. I feel like this is our anthem for today. Wait for it. Okay. I had to get out of my system because that's all I've had in my head since we started talking about this topic. Is that gotcha. Fantastic song. I think it's human nature to ascribe mystical or unexplainable powers to things that we don't understand. And I, you know, for one, don't really understand how the Kinect works. It is computer magic. And I'm pretty tech savvy, but I don't worry about it, and I'm not concerned about it. I guess I just don't care enough. I can't really put any words to it. Maybe it's my comfort level with the internet. The fact that I know that I have stuff out there already, and if somebody wanted to find something on me, there's really nothing I could do. So I guess I'm just kind of at this acceptance level of it is what it is, and if it makes my life easier in some ways, then I'm all for it. You know, if what would be the most wonderful thing in the world to me is if I can look at my phone and go, I really want something to eat, but I don't know what I want. And then an ad would pop up and it would tell me, hey, you know what? Based on your neurochemistry, you want Chinese food and you should go here. That would be awesome. I would be so stoked.
So you've just demonstrated perhaps like the healthiest way to look at this, right?
I'm healthy.
Yeah, because so like if this is really creeping you out and you like don't want to use any devices because you think you're being watched all the time, well, the truth is that, you know, you're not being watched all the time. But and it's a big but, somebody could be watching. There are reports of people being able to hack computers and microphones and just chime in if they really, really wanted to, right? But again, I don't think anybody is that interested in anything I'm doing to be that scared of that particular scenario, but it is possible. So that is a real possibility. But there are other technologies out there that are doing things that people may not be aware of. So the Facebook thing was really interesting because there is actually, you know, like every rumor has a little bit of truth. That some of it got like changed along the way and then it turns into something else. But the truth is that Facebook, their mobile apps do actually have a feature, which you can turn off, but it has a feature that while you're typing your status update, it's actually listening to your, you know, the microphone turns on and it starts listening to everything around you. The idea is that it's trying to pick up on music or TV that's playing in the background so that it can then tell you, oh, hey, you know, we picked up that you're listening to this thing. Do you want to include it in your message? And so that is, that seems pretty benign. And according to Facebook's explanation, that is all that it is. It's not tracking what you were listening to. It just allows you to, allows you a convenience, if you will, right? To kind of share this thing that you are taking part in at the moment, because it's understandable. I mean, it's understood that people use their phone while they're doing something else, like listening to music, watching TV, and it just makes it easier to share. But that, I think, has somehow turned into a lot of people saying, like, hey, did you know that Facebook was listening to you? What? You know? So, that, and it makes sense how that conclusion jumps from, like, one to the other. And that's just one example of, like, how that type of thing, the technology is there and it can happen, and but it's optional, and it, and Facebook is very forward facing with that.
I don't know. I have issues. Facebook is a monster when it comes to privacy. I'm pretty sure the last privacy update was 4,000 words. No one's going to read that. And what you just said, I had no idea it existed. So now I'm like scrolling through my settings trying to figure out, how do I turn that off? Because that's not something that I really want to happen. So I think they're transparent in the way that they don't not tell you that it's there. They will say that it's there, but you really kind of have to know to look for it and to dig for it, because most of these options that are, you know, I'm sure come from a place of wanting to just make your life easier. That's what I like to think, at least. They are opt out. So they by default are on, and then you have to have the knowledge about the new feature, and you have to know where it is and how to turn it off in order to turn it off. And I think that's a lot of steps for people to go through, and it's even harder if you don't know where to go or even how to navigate the privacy settings on Facebook, because straight up they're confusing.
Yeah. Facebook settings, not great. Someday, hopefully. Oh, they can't get worse. They used to be worse. They could get worse. Man, they can really improve. but this particular feature is something they announced. Like, you know, somebody thought this is a great idea. And you know, on a technical aspect alone, I think it is pretty cool. I've never used it, and I usually have everything turned off. But everything we're going to talk about today is opt out, like you said. A lot of this stuff, it's interesting, because a lot of these privacy concerns, at the end of the day, somebody is always going to be able to say, but you agreed to that. And you're like, when did I agree to it? And how often do you go to a new website or open a new app or do something, and it says either the privacy of things are updated or click here to agree, and you don't read the thing, you just scroll through it, and you have no idea what you're signing. But a lot of this type of thing of, hey, we might listen in, we might watch you, we might take some information and use it for something else. People don't read that stuff. But the truth is, we've agreed to so much of it that a lot of these things, we've been giving permission for years for a lot of this stuff.
And I'm trying to recall the exact number right now, but I remember reading something maybe on Cracked or Wired that if you were to actually sit down and read, say, the iTunes Terms of Conditions, take over a year just like reading 24/7. I think one of the latest Terms and Conditions that came out was a 56-page document. And yes, it is the fine print and you are agreeing to it, but I think it's kind of ridiculous to think that people are actually going to read 56 pages. But then again, ignorance is no excuse. And so there's this kind of nebulous area of what are you really liable for and what are you really responsible for as a company and as the consumer.
There's a great, great South Park episode about this. I should probably put that in the show notes. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, they actually take it to the extreme of, like, iTunes, I think, updates the policy, and then they just included that everybody who signs it has to be part of a human centipede, and it gets very disgusting, and it's pretty funny. Oh, man, South Park. So I thought that Facebook thing was interesting, because like you said, like, how many people know that that exists? How many people know that that's happening? And how many people understand really how it's working and all that stuff? But in this case, Facebook, there's information out there. How much of it is true? I don't know. But there's even scarier stuff in terms of the ad space. And a lot of this is in the name of convenience, but a lot of it is also, I think the convenience is the way that it's sold to us, but really advertising is huge, right? Advertising is important, really. And because of the way that computers, but it worked on computers for so long using things like cookies, a lot of people, you know, probably have heard what cookies are. Cookies are these small little files that exist on your computer that kind of help information travel from website to website and from session to session so that you don't have to log in every single time. And so that, you know, there's information that carries over. Again, it makes it a little bit easier for you, but it also helps the company know who they're talking to. Like, oh, it's the same computer, it's the same browser, it's probably the same person. Let's show them this instead of showing them this other thing. And again, for us, it's convenient. And when those things aren't there, sometimes we're like, you know, it bothers us. Like, oh, I have to log in again. Like, why can't you remember this information, right? It bugs us. But with mobile phones, with our cell phones, our tablets, it's very different because we're not just using a browser like we do on the computer. And the issue of cross-device ad targeting is like a serious thing that advertisers are looking into because you use, maybe on your computer, you go into Facebook.com. On your phone, you may be using the Facebook app. And so your browser activity isn't talking to Facebook on your phone in the same way that it's talking to another tab on your browser on your computer. So information doesn't move around the same way. The cookies don't work as well on a mobile phone as they do on your cell phone. So there's this cross-device targeting thing. So Kelly, how do you think, or what do you think would be the best way for maybe like your activity on your computer and your activity on your television and your activity on your phone to kind of all come together?
Google Drive. And honestly, that is one of the greatest things that's ever happened to me. So the fact that I can be on my computer and upload something to Google Drive, whether it's a video or a document, and I can go to any computer anywhere and log in and it's there, and I can pull out my mobile and open my Google Drive app and it's there. And I'm sure if I went on my Xbox and went to Bing, I could log into Google Drive from my Xbox. I would never do that. But that's an example of something that has just made my life so much easier, not only for my schoolwork, but being able to collaborate with other people. You know, throwing a document up into a shared account so everybody can edit and everybody can have their say and everybody always has access to it is, I think, one of the best uses of this cross-platform. I mean, it's not advertising, it's not marketing, but, you know, Google obviously has a lot of those interests as well. Another really good example is Netflix. I love that I can watch Netflix on my computer, on my Xbox, on my phone, and on my tablet. And I never, ever have to, you know, be kind and rewind or go back and find, oh, I'm just a rhyming machine today, and find out where I started or the last episode I watched. It just tracks it across all platforms. And to me, that is invaluable. And I love it. But again, these are things that I as a consumer want, as opposed to, say, marketing or advertising, which is trying to follow me from place to place.
Exactly. And those are great examples, right? Again, like if I have to, every single time I have to log into my Netflix account from a new device, I'm like, oh, come on. Like, you know, like you forget, you don't remember your password because you haven't put in your password to, you know, on your Xbox or on your computer for a really long time, right? Yep. So, or you get a new device, that type of thing. I mean, you wish it was easier to even do that, right? Just to even get the setup going.
A really good example on my Xbox, I walk into the room and the Kinect recognizes my face and logs me in. So I don't have to do anything. I just have to physically exist and I'm logged into my Xbox. Or similarly on my iPhone, it takes my thumbprint, which I'm sure there are people who think that, you know, I'm now on some kind of government registry and they have my fingerprints, but they already did anyway, so that's not the point. But the fact that I don't have to type anything in Apple Pay, you know, I go into buy something and all I do is just push my finger to that magical little circle button and everything else is just done. To me, it's magic and it makes my life better because it's one more annoying little step I don't have to take.
So let's go with magic. I like the word magic. So the problem that advertisers have is that
nobody
a lot
wants
of that
them.
Information. No. Now, in addition to that, you actually do want them to a certain extent. I think everybody does because you do want things to get easier. You even said you wish. Well, you said you wish that it would like read your mind, right? But
yes.
But advertising would still be a part of that. And so your Xbox has all this information saved, probably mostly locally, the same way that your phone, like recently Apple was in the news about the FBI saying that they wanted them to unlock a phone for them. And Apple's argument was that, well, we designed the phone to keep that information on your phone. So like your fingerprint is on your phone. It's not at Apple.
Right.
And so is your Apple Pay information. Like, you know, this is a part of the, like, I've felt very safe about having an iPhone after this conversation because it reaffirms what they've been saying for a long time, which is, you know, your security matters and all that stuff is there. It doesn't talk to anybody else. It's designed to keep your stuff on your device safe. So on the advertising front, all this information is kind of like compartmentalized and they don't even know, like your Xbox knows from your face because you gave it your face, right?
Yes, I gave my Xbox my face.
Yes, right? And that's why it knows, right? And but other devices can't really contact, can't really communicate with each other. And that's kind of what I was getting at. The magic part is that one of the new apparent trends in figuring out this problem for advertisers to be able to target ads more efficiently is that our devices are talking to each other without us knowing. And the way they do that is by having what are called audio beacons, which are inaudible. Like it's at a frequency that we cannot even hear, but one device is emitting it and the other device is hearing it. So now your phone knows that you were watching Fuller House all weekend and you were on your computer doing something else or on your Xbox playing Halo. And now it can target ads specifically mixing those things together. And that is something that people would definitely not be aware of because it really isn't, you wouldn't know it's happening.
So are you saying that Ellie can hear my computer, but I can't?
So I looked this up, and it's not on a frequency that's bugging too many dogs, apparently.
Oh, good, because that's my main concern. I don't care about my privacy, but if you're upsetting my dog, I'm gonna come after you.
And of course, you're referring to the fact that different species, right? Different animals, they can hear things that you know, their range of their audible frequencies are different than ours. So some things that we might not be able to hear, they could hear, and they can actually. But yeah, but this isn't at a point. Could you imagine that if all of a sudden all those audio beacons like just drove every animal crazy? Like they were so high that it was really annoying to them.
That would be awful.
That would be horrible. Yeah.
That to me is the worst case scenario.
Yeah, and that's why that is not what's happening. It's like right outside of our range, and it's not really bugging anybody that we know of yet. But it's happening. Like the technology exists. The implementation is still a little difficult, and it's interesting to see how it's playing out because this type of technology, and people keep getting more and more curious about creative with how to do this. But now the devices are just talking to each other, and with it now. We did opt in at some point. At some point, you agreed to something, right? Like you've been agreeing to things for years. And that's why this is happening. But I think, you know, I have mixed feelings about it. And I think it's important for people to know that some of those ideas are coming into fruition, right? We're living in a world now where your devices can talk to each other and you didn't even know. So the fact that ads might be coming up that seem very again, just creepy that showed up, because you don't remember when you searched for it. You remember what you did. It could be that you were watching a TV show about that. Or it could be, and I haven't found proof of this yet, but potentially it could be a conversation you were having at home that got picked up on your Amazon Echo or whatever it is that you have in your home that you're talking to these days. And yeah, that's the world we live in.
Audio beacons sound like a conspiracy theorist's dream come true.
Right? It almost sounds like it's not real. So how do you feel? Like before you said you feel comfortable, you don't care about this kind of stuff. How do you feel about your devices talking to each other without you, without your input?
I don't mind devices talking to each other. It's the consent piece. I feel like we almost every episode we come back to this idea of consent. And even though I have apparently unwittingly granted consent, I guess the word I want to use is informed consent, as we do in the psychology world, that the person needs to know, not just know, but understand what consent means and what are the consequences and ramifications of that consent. I mean, anybody who's ever done any kind of psychological study, even something as simple as just a survey about podcasting, if you have to go through IRB, you have to answer all these questions and provide a consent form that tells people, you know, this is what's going to happen. This is what you can expect. If you have a problem or questions, you can call here. This is the purpose of it. And this is the possible benefit of it. And these are the possible risks of it. And I mean, thankfully, those consent forms are usually only a page to two. And I'm sure most people don't read them anyway. But I am an advocate for informed consent when it comes to something being, you know, if it's going to do something like track my audio, I feel like I should be made aware of it fully, not, oh, you didn't read the 56-page iTunes contract, therefore you accepted it, and now we don't have to talk about it ever again.
But what do you think is acceptable as far as, because if they're putting all the information there, they're not omitting anything. Every time we have this conversation, I'm curious about how do you think, what should be allowed? Should you be quizzed afterwards to make sure that you read it? Should you be given, should there also be a video and a podcast and all this other stuff that you have to go through just to make sure that you understand what's happening?
I think there should be a too long, did not read, a TLDR, as it were. And sometimes people do this. I know every time Facebook comes up with a new update, a day or so later, there's always a tech site like Wired or Cracked that gives you the highlights so that you're not reading through 55 and a half pages of legal jargon that has no application to you to get to that one paragraph about something that is actually important. So I think the onus may not be on the advertiser or the company, but I definitely think that there's room in the space for kind of a consumer protection type of organization, and there may be one that exists. I know there are the CSB, Consumer Services Bureau, I think is what it's called, and it does that for like banks and housing and to make sure that you're not getting totally screwed over. And so again, there are some sites that do it, but I would like to see more of that, and maybe kind of like how cigarettes have to supplement non-smoking ad campaigns, maybe marketing people or advertising people should have to supplement some kind of organization that lays out these are the 10 most critical changes, and here's what they do for you in the good, and here are the possible risks. That is something that I would like to see.
I think that ultimately just people will not read it. Even when you see attempts of it won't let you just agree because you haven't scrolled through the whole thing, right? Have you ever encountered those?
Oh yeah, and I just scroll.
And then you just scroll right through, right? It even bothers me that they're making it harder for me. Because I get it. You want me to read this, but I'm not going
to
read it.
And to me, that is just a failure at the human level. Like we talk about, you know, looking at the human side of technology. Nobody, except maybe a lawyer, is going to read all of that. And to think that somebody will is absurd. Now, again, the legal ramifications are beyond my wheelhouse. That's definitely above my pay grade.
Exactly. You have to spell it out that way so that everybody's covered. And the consent piece that you're saying is actually delivered, right? Like you have to touch each and every one of those points and make sure that everything, the idea that all of the information is there is not the same as the information is clear and easy to understand.
And it's
but
informed,
if any of it is vague, then it could be a problem.
I mean, I could pull up the iTunes iTunes terms of service right now and start reading it. And to me, most of it is just legal jargon. It's very, very hard to understand. And, you know, I think I'm pretty smart. I got a doctorate. I know how to read academic babble, but I still can't make heads or tails necessarily of what is being put forth there. So, yeah, I think
you could if you actually read it.
I don't know. I mean, some of it's pretty dense.
I don't think you've read any of it.
Well, no, and also because, I mean, I could sit and try and analyze, or I could get on with my life and, you know, actually have a life instead of spending hours every day reading every update to terms of service that I have.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, but again, so you've agreed to it. Everybody's agreed to it. And what you're agreeing to now is things like your television and your cell phone talking to each other without you knowing, so that while you're watching, give me the show, while you're watching the Colbert show, right? You're watching late night, the late show, you can now get ads that are related to whoever the guest was that night or something like that, or information about them on your phone. And it kind of seems seamless. And so I think it's weird that this is happening and people are not aware, right? I think I can't think of many other ways for this to actually happen, right? That doesn't include your devices talking to each other. They have to, because otherwise then you have to do what you described with Google Drive and Netflix, which is you have to download, log in, and set it up in a certain way where, like, okay, now everything is there. And this way, you know, you don't have to commit to downloading and setting up all this other stuff, because the information that you might want shared back and forth it's experiential. It's about what's happening at the moment, and it kind of just it fine-tunes that experience, which, again, the experience we're talking about is advertising for the most part. And advertising, right? But so how do you feel? I don't know. Like, I think at least I can say I think I would opt in to, like, even if it was like a big old screen that said, hey, this is happening now, would you opt in? I don't know. I have to think about it. Would I opt in or not?
I know my biggest moment of pause is around the idea of efficacy. So, for example, linking in Google Drive and being able to access it everywhere has had a demonstrably positive impact on my ability to work, my ability to collaborate, on my ability to do my homework. And so there's a value to it. And if there is a risk in Google Drives and sharing that information, to me, the benefit dramatically outweighs the risk. Whereas with these audio beacons, to me, there's no efficacy whatsoever that it is actually making my life better in a meaningful and perceptible way. And especially if that means, oh, well, you like Pizza Hut over Domino's. We're only going to give you Pizza Hut commercials. That, to me, is not a significant enough incentive or positive impact on my life to the possible risks and risks associated with it, you know, such as my voice being recorded, stored, hacked, et cetera, et cetera. So I know that's also possible on Google Drive, but in that case, again, the rewards outweigh the risks. And I think what you're getting at, Josue, is that most people don't even know the risks exist.
Not only that, but I don't think they realize the benefits either. Because there are things that you do take for granted, like your example about the baby shopping stuff, right? The ad gods assumed that you were in the market for baby stuff and didn't know specifically, instead of asking you, like, oh, is this for a baby shower or is this for you? Like, is this because if it's for you, this is something that's going to be ongoing and, you know, we can, like, throw stuff at you, like coupons and sales and things like that. And maybe, like, for you in that particular instance, it wasn't a big deal. But maybe some of your behaviors, like, maybe you don't want to see a Nintendo or a Sony ad, right? Like, you only want to see what's new with Xbox, right? So that kind of profile, like that is happening. And so you're way less likely to see advertisements for things from these other companies or brands that don't matter to you. And so they don't come up. One example that I think is, that I do find really interesting is Evernote. Like Evernote, I use it in the same way that you described Drive. It's mm-hmm. something that's very helpful for me. But now it has a predictive component too. So while I'm writing a note, it actually, if you use it on the computer, it actually pops up at the bottom and says, oh, hey, there are these other notes that are related. Also, here are some news articles about things that are related to the thing that you're writing about. This might be helpful for you.
I find that so annoying. I have the exact same thing and it bunks the crap out of me. I'm like, go away. I don't want you.
But there is a potential benefit to that in that if I am writing something and I'm looking for, I don't even have to go out and Google something now. Like I'm getting some possibly relevant information. And that is a potential benefit, right? But it is actually relevant. It is not completely out there, right? Like if I'm writing about audio beacons, it's not talking to me about, you know, a new Mercedes or something like that. And so I think, especially for people who are surrounded by ads continuously, the effects are even more harder to see maybe because of how used to them we are. Because I'm living right now in a way that I have less and less ads every day. I'm in a place in my life where I can choose to pay that extra dollar mm-hmm. to have an ad-free version, and I pay $3 or $4 extra on Hulu to never see an ad. And it was interesting when I had Hulu, before there was an ad-free option, it used to annoy me a lot that ads would come up, and sometimes I would see ads seemed catered to me, right? Because they're tailored to me. But every now and then, based mostly on the show that I'm watching, but sometimes an ad would come up, I'm like, what is this? Like, why am I getting this ads for like women's shoes, right? I'm like, this isn't relevant to me. And it would be a little jarring. And for a while they used to ask like, oh, is this ad helpful? Or is this ad like relevant to you? And you could say yes or no to kind of help fine tune that algorithm. And I think that just advertising, people may not want to admit that advertising is a part of just consuming anything nowadays, because a lot of the things that we do consume, we don't pay for them directly. So we have to have ads, right? And other things, we do have the option to have an ad-free version, but lots of times we don't. And when we don't, it's interesting to get those catered ads. Well, go ahead.
Well, what's also interesting is that I know, for example, I play a couple iPhone games, and this one, even if you pay for it, you still get ads, and it really drives me nuts. And so I make a point of every time, just after every round, I shut my phone down so I don't have to see the ad. It's the same thing on when I'm watching Amazon streaming. I'll mute the commercials and go and do something else. Or, you know, if I'm on YouTube, if there's somebody who has a 1 minute ad that I can't skip, I'll just close the video. Like I have very strong anti-advertising opinions. If you'd like to advertise on PsychTech and help support us, let us know. So my very strong anti-ad feelings, you know, I've found a way to deal with them, and I've found a way around them. Now, if I, you know, have a premium service where I don't get ads, that's great. But there, I feel like there's a way around them, and that's what I like, because I feel like I'm fighting the man, and I'm not going to be party to your brainwashing shenanigans.
See, but you have the energy to combat that. And I think for most people, that's not the experience. For most people, it's like, well, an ad is just, ads are just a part of my reality. I have to wait for it, or I have to wait 15 seconds to skip it, kind of thing. And again, or like in my case, I don't get YouTube ads anymore. I don't get ads on my favorite websites because I decided to subscribe. And now every time I see an ad, it is so jarring. It is so weird to get a video ad. And also, like, video ads, period, right? Like, commercials are a very different beast than print ads. Like, print ads, I'd like to think that they're almost invisible to me. Very rarely is there an ad where I'm like, whoa, there's an ad there. Like, those that, like, pop up and, like, fill up half the screen or take up all the borders around a website, like, that type of thing, those you notice, but for the most part, the little ones, I barely see them anymore, which is, again, part of the problem why, it's part of the reason why that companies are trying so hard to make sure that they're targeting things, as you said, efficacy, right, is in such a way that is, has some potential benefit.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a single example where there's been a targeted ad that I actually found benefit from. You know, there was the baby shower thing that I mentioned earlier, and I found that annoying because now everything's baby images on my page. And at that point in my life, that was not something that was of interest to me, and it was really annoying. I know a lot now with all this political stuff with the election season, I'm like, no, I don't want to see this. I don't want to see this. I don't care who it is. I just don't want to see it. Or I actually saw an article from last year showing that Facebook changed up its algorithm. So when you're scrolling through something, if you hesitate on an article, you don't even have to like it or click on it. But if you hesitate on an article, it runs an algorithm which says, oh, you should show more of this content. Even though they didn't click on it, even though they didn't like it, they spent more time on this image. Mm-hmm. Which to me is like, no, you're making really dumb assumptions. You know, if someone's looking at something, it doesn't mean it's something they like. You know, I had somebody post something that was, I don't know, it was like pro-Trump. And again, I don't want to get into politics, but I remember sitting there looking at it going, is this The Onion, or is this real? Or did this really happen? And so I'm stopping and I'm hesitating on this. Doesn't mean I want to see more of it and I want to see less of it. But I think that's one of the problems that that advertisers and marketing are struggling with is they're getting all this information, but they don't know what to do with it. They're trying their best, but just because you hover over something doesn't mean that you actually want to see more of it. It could actually be a negative experience and you can make it worse. I think I used the example in an earlier Psych Tech episode where they had that Facebook like flashback where it shows you your memories from however many years ago. And the very first memory it picked of mine was the day my dog died. And I'm like, no, bad. You're doing it wrong. You're doing it so wrong. You have all this data. That reminds me, did you watch the Jeopardy episode when they had Watson on there?
I've seen clips, yeah.
So Watson, of course, the IBM smart computer. And sometimes it had the dumbest answers. I mean, sometimes it was spot on and it was definitely faster than the players. But a lot of times it had really stupid answers. And that's kind of what I feel like right now is the marketing, the algorithms, all the computer magic is just really dumb and it feels really clunky and it usually makes my experience worse.
So the dog example is horrible because it's probably bringing it back up based on engagement from that time.
Yep.
But it was engagement because it was a bad thing and people were probably showing support, and that's something that you want to revisit every year. But here's a few examples. So the Reddit comment that I mentioned before, that thread, it came about because someone said the conversation he was having with someone in the house was about cockroaches, and then he saw an ad for exterminators. So that is a very relevant, possibly helpful thing to kind of pop up, right? Because again, going back to that comment you said earlier, which is I found really funny, which, like, if you were kind of hungry, you just looked at your phone, you wish it would, like, give you exactly what you wanted that you didn't even know you wanted. And I think that's exactly the magic that advertisers and marketing are trying to pull off, because you're going to spend money, right? That's the assumption. And they want to, you know, people who want to target you the fastest way possible. So the exterminator thing is one example. One example that I found really interesting is that every now and then I'll have an ad pop up or I'll get something in the mail that's in Spanish. And The moment that happens, I think, whoa, that's interesting. Why did I get something in Spanish? Like, how do they know that I speak Spanish? Every time I write my name, I always write it with the, you know, the tilde on the E. I write it correctly. But that also doesn't mean that I know Spanish. If I'm consuming a lot of content in Spanish and then things start changing to Spanish to more effectively target me, it could conceivably make things easier for me if I'm a primarily Spanish speaker. So that's like a behavior that could be beneficial. Also something like if you are always looking up coupons, right? And you're looking up sales and things like that, which is something that I do think is part. Sometimes the ads that pop up are related to something that I'm interested in. I didn't get to buy, and now I'm getting like sales on them, and that is kind of helpful because I am looking to save money, and if I'm looking to save money, then that is helpful. But if I am looking at, I don't know, like to do another degree, and I'm looking at one university, and now I'm getting ads for all the universities, that isn't necessarily helpful, but I can see how it could be. And so it is something that on their end, they are trying to figure out as much as possible. But on the other hand, just on the experience, our experience side, it is, you know, how do they collect the most data? Like they still need to figure out what to do with the data, but how are we giving them that data, and what data are they getting? That's what's really interesting. And kind of the last thing I want to touch on is that when people are having these experiences, like when I had the experience of getting an ad in Spanish, I kind of started freaking out, like, why did I get something in Spanish? Who knows that I know Spanish? Like, how does this happen? And that's where I think that's where confirmation bias comes in big time, right? So like that guy had a conversation about cockroaches, and he saw an ad about exterminators, and that confirmed for him that Facebook was listening to his conversation, and that is what happened. And the truth is that right now there's no actual proof that that is what is happening to that degree. But just because you're seeing more ads about something that you're thinking about, that's kind of how confirmation bias works.
Yeah, you're looking for information that conforms to what you already think is correct. And you tend to either ignore or discount or rationalize away information that is not copacetic with your current set of beliefs or ideas.
So literally you like see more of what you want to see and less of what you don't. So I don't have an exact number for how many ads the average American is hit with on a daily basis, but it's probably a pretty large number. Anything from billboards and print to TV to audio to everything, right? It's tons of them. And it's true, like a lot of them, you don't pick up on every single one. And when you are kind of thinking this way, right, like maybe I've had two or three Spanish ads pop up, but those are some that have always stayed with me because I'm like, how do they know? Because I do have this... Because I do have this kind of concern in the back of my mind about who's listening and what are they paying attention to and where is this being recorded and how is this happening? And that one in particular is a very personal one, right? Like I do know Spanish. I do speak Spanish. So, and how did they know that? If they know that, what else do they know?
Everything.
No.
I mean, I could also see it being an issue of, I mean, if something like that happened, I could see some people taking it as being profiled. So that would be like the opposite end of the spectrum of feeling, exactly. Oh, you're targeting me and it has not the best connotation to it. You're like perpetuating a stereotype almost in marketing form. But there are definitely pros and cons. I tend to see more of the cons on when it comes to marketing and advertising. That's my personal view. And, you know, I tend to fight the man as much as I can. But I definitely...
But at the same time, you want them to... You're okay with them listening and watching as much as they want.
I just don't care enough. Yeah. If they want to listen and watch, and then... It reminds me a lot of, like, the first generation iPhone, in that I didn't want it because it was so buggy and clunky. And even... I didn't even get one until the 3GS, I think. And that's kind of what I wish I could do with advertising right now, is can I just go back to old school advertising until you get your stuff figured out and you work out it's not so clunky and you're not sending me pictures of my dead dog and you're not reminding me of terrible things or assuming you know what I want when you clearly have no idea and know I'm not going to help you by giving you feedback because you're advertising and you're not really making my life any better? Like, go save a kitten or cure cancer or something? Can we do that? Like, I would be down with that. But...
See, but I think this is a clear example of confirmation bias also, because you do get hit with so many ads so often that you're probably, because of the way you, because of your beliefs and your attitudes about this, you tend to see the ones that really don't hit home and bug you. And you, like, the ones that are, like, spot on or pretty much, like, in that range of, you know, Kelly territory, they don't, like, you don't think about those.
Well, let's see. I just opened up Facebook, and the first ad is for Jobber, a job search app. Nope. Don't care. Let's open up Twitter and see what's on, if I've got any, what is it? Are they sponsored tweets, I think is what they're called? I kill those every chance I get. But us here, suggested
app. Now
you're
literally looking for
Dungeon Boss
to...
I do understand that it is obviously context specific, and I'm not saying it's not confirmation bias, because everybody, I mean, pretty much everybody has that kind of cognitive fallacy. They have confirmation bias. It exists. It's kind of what... Oh, here we go. Here's a sponsored tweet. The first one in my timeline. It's for Bud Light. I don't drink, and I'm currently pregnant. Come on, Twitter. Get with it. But no, I mean, obviously, that's looking for something that's in the moment as opposed to over time, which leads to anecdotal evidence, which is tied hand in hand with confirmation bias. So it's just important to be aware, especially in an election season. Confirmation bias, like, reigns supreme. And there's a fascinating study that I just read, but I think that'll have to be for another time.
Yeah, I mean, if
I'm
you're,
just teasing if, you there. Can do you feel a tease?
A little. if you are also always fighting ads and you don't give them a chance, so then definitely your ads are going to be all messed up, which is part of the irony of it, because I do think that, at least I can speak for myself. Yeah, and when the ads are not good, but I mean, you know, well targeted, well tailored, I think I actually kind of enjoy ads, and I think that they are a part of people's experience, and the better that they are, I mean, it improves. I don't know. I do see a lot of potential benefits, and I do see them as a necessity, unfortunately, for many businesses, and for most businesses, really. And how to reach consumers and how to reach the right people. It's good to know that a lot of these technologies are improving. They're still not perfect. They're very far from perfect. But I thought it was an interesting conversation to have about how I think a lot of people believe that they're being watched all the time, and that's not exactly true, but it's not exactly wrong either. And the way we look at the world has a lot to do with not only the efficacy of our ads, but also the actual reality of where we are on the technology side of it.
Yeah, technology, get better. That's my take-home message for advertising. Get better at doing what you're supposed to do.
It's getting better.
And that's the scary part, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, you said you would like to go back to the old school advertising, but I don't think. See, like, political ads, that is the old school advertising. That is people just bombarding particular spaces with money to the point where all of the data that's being collected that's trying to make that experience a little better for consumers goes completely out the window. Yeah, it's just like, nope, just take political ads here. Just take
it. You just say Xbox mute, and then you don't have to hear it. And then you go to Twitter and, you know, during the commercial breaks. And
But then you have to have your Kinect hooked up, staring at you and listening to you all the time.
If somebody wants to peek in, you know what? Microsoft can do,
I don't know what Phil Spencer's doing with that information.
Hey, they already own my soul, basically. So I guess maybe that's one of the reasons I'm like, okay, you know, you know everything about me already. You have like 5 million NDAs. Go ahead. If you want to see me play Dance Central, go for it. I don't care.
You can't just drop acronyms on people and
non-disclosure agreement. I can't tell you what it means. Yeah. I'm under NDA. I bought my NDA.
All right, everybody, and that is it for this week's episode of Psych Tech, where we discussed whether or not your devices are listening to you. They are. Spoilers. If you jump to the end, what? No, I'm going to edit that. That's stupid.
I think we should just go out on the "I always feel like somebody's watching me" song. I feel like that's our anthem.
Maybe.
I'd sing, more, but that'd be awful.
No, I don't know. You can sing it. More. You should sing it.
No. He's got a really high voice. I can't.
All right. And for more PsychTech, visit psychtechpodcast.com. Visit us on, or follow us on Twitter at PsychTechCast. And any information that we mentioned today should be in the show notes on the website. And we'll talk to everybody next time.
Somebody's watching me.
I was going to join in, but my voice is too...
Uh-huh.
I lost my voice this week. I can't do it. And I forgot the words.